Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires we call the interwebs, it's little Joey Ryder. Hey, Joe!
You won't believe what happened.
Do you have a Black Friday story?
No. Lady Gaga kidnapped Commissioner Gordon. I'm serious. This is coming straight out of the Onion. It's got to be true. Yep, she brazenly abducted Commissioner James Gordon from a charity fundraiser on Tuesday, leaving police baffled and the citizens of Gotham fearing for their safety. Known for her outlandish costumes and geometric polygon hair, the criminal madwoman made a daring escape from Arkham Asylum last week and has been taunting authorities by interrupting television broadcasts ever since. And she did that on Thanksgiving, too.
Yeah, somebody's got to explain to me. It's Thanksgiving night. You gather the family around the television. They usually have, you know, family style movies. And what did they have on ABC?
Charlie Brown.
A Lady Gaga Thanksgiving.
That's to balance out the Charlie Brown special, which, if you notice, was real interesting because the first part of the special was the classic Thanksgiving one with the awesome match between Snoopy and a folding chair. And I know a lot of you youngsters out there have no idea what these folding chairs were like. Believe me, they were lethal. Many people have lost limbs and fingers trying to get these dang things unfolded. But then the second half was a terrible, terrible renditioning of the Peanuts on the Mayflower coming overseas to basically invade the Americas. And it's just, it's amazing because it's not a sugared down event of Thanksgiving like we're taught in grade school, but it was painful to watch. So if I do it again next year, I'm just going to watch the classic and maybe turn on a Shrek movie or something. I don't know.
I watched. You ready for this, Joe? Do you remember back in the 80s and early 90s what Thanksgiving meant to wrestling fans?
Oh, that's right. Kiss meets Santa. No, wait a minute. What?
Survivor Series the night before and Starcade on Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah. Now you're talking.
So I watched Survivor Series on one of the DVDs, and I watched some of the Starcade box set.
Oh, fun.
And when I watched the Flair Ricky Steamboat match, I turned it off because there's nothing any better than that. But this ain't a show about cartoons and wrestling and eating Thanksgiving dinner and having way too much pie. This is a show about funny books.
Oh, yeah, I'm reading one. I picked up a cheap copy of George Carlin, Last Words. Good stuff.
And who drew it?
I don't think George draws. He's dead.
Crickets
though.
Make their first holiday appearance, everyone. No, this here's a show about comic books.
Oh, the thing that British dude was raving on and on about.
On The Simpsons?
No, episode 52, or was it 51?
It was 51.
High T.
There was no episode 52.
As opposed to us having low T.
Superboy punched a wall, and that episode no longer exists.
Neither does Superboy, come to think of it.
Yeah.
And you know what else? You know what else doesn't exist? And I'm mightily pissed off about? DC invalidated their entire DC 1 million history with their reboot. Gone. 100% gone.
So all the crises are gone.
Crises are gone. Solaris, probably the coolest villain. I've been waiting for its return because they sit there and they said in the history that it fought Superman dozens of times. And the cryptic warning at the end of 1 million was, well, we know he returns at least once in our lifetime. You know, never mind, Superman's going to live to 1 million. You know, what a killjoy. But anyways, it's all gone. It's over, man. Game over. I'm shredding it. I've got to get rid of it. I can't live with it anymore.
What about Bye, Bye Night?
Goodbye. Oh, and goodbye, crossovers. Oh, boy, they got stuck in there. There we go.
Oh, what about Underworld Unleashed?
Oh, please. That's as bad as Death Loop. Oh, God.
How about Legends?
Well, the art was pretty.
What was the one where we found out all the...
Millennium?
Half the DC Universe were secret manhunters.
Millennium.
Oh, yeah, and it ended with that horrible New Guardians series.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love Steve Englehart. I do. I love Steve Englehart, but pretty much after, like, 1990, something happened and his stories weren't as good. I remember Millennium thinking, oh, they're going to let Steve Englehart do this big crossover. This could be as good as the Avengers Defenders War. And it wasn't. And then the New Guardians book that spun out of it, they really hyped it by saying we're going to have the first major ongoing gay character, Extrano, who was the worst stereotype I've ever read in a modern comic. It makes Ebony Brown and Whitewash look enlightened. He was a flamboyant Brazilian who wore big flowing dresses.
The kind seen mostly on the Electra Company.
And I don't remember anything about him other than when I would see him on the page, I would cringe.
But don't you remember it was a fat South American guy? No, South African guy who declined to accept the powers being offered him because he didn't want to hang around with a gay guy. So naturally, at the end of the series, he was their arch enemy.
Oh, there you go.
To destroy them because they had a gay person on the team.
That's almost as good as how Night...
You would never see that happening in today's society.
Well, there is that. That's almost as truthful and as enlightened as what North Star... I'm gay! As he's punching a guy in the face.
I am gay!
Thank God for Neil Gaiman came along and, you know, you had gay characters and normal characters and all this stuff. And it wasn't a big deal. It's just kind of who they were.
You know,
and
everybody
decided, you know what? I'm going to steal from Neil Gaiman and I'm going to treat these characters like they're actual people that I know.
You know, did you catch the Simpsons episode? For us, it would have been last Sunday, but I think probably two Sundays ago. Neil Gaiman was in it.
Yes, and was hilarious.
And we found out the truth of how he got to be a best-selling author.
That's right.
We're not giving it away. You're going to have to go look for it. Or catch it in reruns. Or on Hulu. Or illegally.
Well, you know what? Some things haven't gone away.
Oh, you're talking about having a bowl of Frosted Mini-Wheats cereal before you brave the Black Friday crowds this morning.
No, I'm talking about our advertisers.
Oh. Yeah,
advertiser number one is DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com is the greatest web host in the universe, bar none.
Yes.
The host of the Solitaire Rose family of websites. It's the host of Mark Evanier's, all of his websites. Millions of websites hosted by DreamHost.com. Never, ever, ever have I had a problem with them.
Billions and billions of hosts.
And if you go there and use the code CRAZY, you get $20 off your first year of hosting.
Ooh.
And if you sign up for a year of hosting, they do the domain setup and everything for free, which if you go to GoDaddy or one of those others, they usually charge $78 on top. So you've just saved. You go there, you set up your webpage, you've saved $28.
You know, it's too bad we don't have a way to refer people and let them save a little money.
Joe, if they use the code CRAZY, they save $20.
Really?
Yes.
Well, you know, if you go to eBay and you look up CRAZY, you'll find that since I'm home for a while, I'm selling stuff again on eBay.
Crackin' hookers?
No.
Damn it.
Just comic books. And usually ones with big hooters. For example, I was going to mention things that I'm selling right now, but they're all going to be gone. But just to give you an idea of what I'm doing, I've literally got about 400 or 500 variant covers. Don't ask me why. I picked them up for various reasons. I was having fun with them. And I pretty much decided, as an investment, variant covers suck. And I'm just getting rid of them. And for the most part, I'm doing them all at 99 cents. Right now, as we speak, these are going online. I've got the World War Hulk number one Diamond Comics exclusive sketch cover variant, started at 99 cents. I've got a 7-Eleven exclusive variant cover, Incredible Hulk number 25. I put on the Vampirilla number one dynamic covers. I had the Alex Ross. I had the Virgin Alex Ross. I had the negative Campbell Ray Taylor. I had all sorts of things. These are selling, but I just give you an idea of some of the things that have sold already. I sold Michael Turner's Fathom number four, the Aspen Store variant, the Fathom number one tribute variant. I've sold a lot of Wizard Ace editions, if you remember those things. A couple Dark Ivory, both signed by Joe Linsner. Pretty much everything I talked about went for 99 cents. And you
99 cents?
I know. These are books that I brought to cons, and I've tried blowing out at $5. They're books back in the day that probably retailed for 20, maybe went for more. But I'm just getting rid of them. So when you go, I put a link on our page, our official Crazy Comics and Stuff podcast page. You can go right from there. Otherwise, just look for me on eBay under the Crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z. You mentioned you heard it here. If you see something like, you see something you buy, I'll ship it for free. Save you about $3 or $4, depending on what you do. That's just the way I fly.
Well, there you go.
I'm also selling, of course, on the toypeddler.com. And he's got a basic deal going. If you get some free listing credits there, if you've never tried before, he'll give you $5. Unlike eBay, which takes a little bit from the beginning and a little bit from the end, Toy Peddler, just buy the listing credits. The rest is up to you. And it's an interesting place because the number one thing selling there is diecast cars. And you can find a number of them. There's a whole line of diecast cars just came out by Hot Wheel that have the DC comic characters on them. I haven't seen them in Target. They're calling them the Nostalgia Line. They first started out, they did cereal, like Blueberry, Booberry, Count Chocula, Frankenberry. Then they went and they did Masters of the Universe. Then they did a DC Comics line. And I haven't seen them. I'd like to buy them. If you're looking for them, they're there. You can see some of the classic Hot Wheels from the 70s, some of the Corgis that had the – if you remember the Superman mobile that they had in the comic books, the action comics?
Oh,
Superman
yeah.
Lost his powers because – there was, what, red radiation or green radiation from Krypton bathing the Earth. So they gave him the Superman mobile, a horrible little thing with fists, silver fists coming out of the front of it. Well, you can buy yourself a little Corgi reproduction of that if you want. All on toypeddler.com. He also sells toys, comics, and other things. There's a place you can go to get some really good deals because most people tend to go right to eBay for it. If you're looking for a good deal, I can't help you with shipping there. But again, I'm selling a bunch of stuff there. Same word, K-R-A-Y-Z. That's all the plugs I got. I mean, it's still a ways away.
Later in the show, the
MCBA Spring Comic Book Celebration is May 19th and 20th, 2012, at the Minnesota State Fairgrounds. This is the big two-day grandstand one, but that's a little too far away to talk about. So we'll just put that to the side and not mention it.
Yeah, we'll wait a bit.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
We have a new sponsor later in the show, believe it or not.
Oh, a nude sponsor. You finally got Hef to cough up some Playboy money?
Crickets again, ladies and gentlemen. They're not out on Black Friday.
I mean, you got a cat in your place. Those crickets will be eaten or baked into a pie.
I do not eat cricket pie.
You would never know it. You couldn't tell if it was a pecan or just a crunchy bit.
You're a sick, sick little man. Speaking of cars!
Oh, I thought you were going to speak of sick.
I just read a book where the Spider-Mobile is a major character.
Do tell.
Joe, have you read Old Man Logan yet?
You know, that was, again, one of those, I picked up various copies, but I never got the complete story, so I just think I eBayed them all.
I sat down and read the whole thing over the, well, one of the things is, I'm at the group home a lot now, because I told them, hey, I'm available, and they are throwing shifts at me, and whenever one of the overnight people takes a day off, there I am. So cool. I'm filling up the backpack with hardcovers that I get either from, that I haven't had time to read, or go to the library and snag, because it's like, you know, I've got these comics. I'll just get the hardcover and read it at work. So I sat down and I read Old Man Logan, which is set 50 years after the villains take over. And the story starts with Hawkeye showing up in the Spider-Mobile to pick up Wolverine and take him across the country.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, the Spider-Mobile.
I love that stuff.
Really good book, really well done. I'm glad I didn't read any of the spoilers because there are some surprises in it.
Well, I may have to go out of my way and find it.
Now, here's the thing. I can see why if you were picking it up as a regular comic, you would have got just furious with it because it's very fast-paced. I think I read the whole book in, it was less than an hour. But I remember it came out later and later and later to the point where the finale had to be in a special one-shot because it was so late they needed to get a Wolverine book out. So I read that. I'm also still reading through the DC 52.
You know,
some of them I really like, and
I've got that lined up. I have not quite gone there yet.
Some of them, like Superboy, damn painful to read. I'm going to do a special episode here in a couple of weeks to talk about sales and see how we did with our predictions. One of the things that's just fascinating about it to me is there are a lot of books where the initial orders on the number two issues are more than the initial orders on the number one issues. And I think part of that is because you can up your order up till, what, 2 weeks before?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people were seeing how the number one sold and went and ordered a bunch more of the number twos. Now, Joe, you go to shops. I don't go to shops because I get everything mail order. So you've seen number twos and number threes. How are the stores on having those? Because I know number ones, they were pretty much out of. But
well,
are there tons
weird.
Of twos and threes?
It's kind of odd because I go to Uncle Sven's, and that's kind of a weird microcosm because it's an offshoot of the main store, the Source. And it's actually Uncle Sven's is the oldest comic shop in Minnesota, if I'm not mistaken. But their shelves, you know, they'll be out of something and I'll go to the Source and they'll have plenty of them. You know, Swamp Thing 2, you know, I was missing it for whatever. I didn't actually order it. I just read the first issue. I liked it. And, but when I went to the Source, they had plenty of them. So it wasn't a big problem. I read a thing online, Tilting with Windmills by, I can't think of his name. Brian, he's a comic retailer. He's been tilting at windmills for ages and he says,
now I gotta look it up.
I know. He says that he's noticing the same problem that all comics have. Number one sold out. Number twos aren't selling as much. Number threes, he thinks they're going to keep dropping. And he says it's just a matter of time before the interest in the DC universe gets back to just us comic geeks. You know, he's happy with the sales. He's just not, you know, he does not think this is the thing that's going to save four color funny books. Brian Hitch?
Yes, Brian Hitch. Yeah.
So. And I got to even admit, you know, I was talking with my, you know, with Gruber, my old buddy, and there's times where he'll say, oh, yeah, number two came out of this. And I go, really? I don't remember getting it. And then I go through my collection. I did get it. So the books are blurring together. and they're just not, I don't know, they're interesting enough. I've upped my subscription load for a while, but I just don't know. This, like, number twos really torqued me off because I felt like I was getting gypped. I mean, they cut the stories back, what, to 20 pages from 22?
Yes.
And then they give me filler for another Batman graphic novel that I'm not prone to buy anyways.
And I got to be honest.
52 times, that's a lot of reprint. I mean, even I got annoyed when Boom Studio did that with Irredeemable because, like, you get half a story and then you get a preview for another book. But I didn't read Boom Across the Line, so I only got it once. But to get it, you know, 20 times to cover the books, to me, it's a waste of filler to me. It's like I'd rather just go back to 22, 24 pages and, you know, charge me an extra 50 cents or dollar, whatever.
Now, I like painted books, and I enjoy a lot of the painted graphic novels that they've done of Batman. But the one that they're advertising, I think it's called Snow.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, is that hard to read? I think it's one of those cases where I was interested in it till I saw the pages from it. And then I went, yeah, no. Which is probably the opposite reaction of what they wanted.
You know, it's really odd. I haven't actually been to my comic store in 2 weeks. Because last week... this is the day after Thanksgiving, alleged Black Friday.
We prefer to call it African-American Friday here.
I prefer to call it a marketing campaign. I mean, after reading about it, they never really called it Black Friday until the 50s. So, or was it the 60s? It might have been the 2006. I don't remember. But anyways, I was on my way to go meet Gruber for lunch, and my car died.
Oh, not good.
So I pulled over and it was a nice sunny day and I just kind of fell asleep. And so I've been basically without a car for a couple weeks, which is another reason why I'm selling tons of crap on eBay in case you're, you know, feeling a little guilty about not buying anything. It's like $800 fuel tank or fuel pump gone. So I just, my brother said he'll take care of it for less, but you know, you got to wait for him to do it on the side. So I'm kind of without a car. So I haven't been to the comic shop in a couple weeks. So I do what most comic geeks do. I go back into the archives and pull out stuff I've been meaning to read for some time. The first item that I pulled out was a two-book set from Oni Press. Frumpy the Clown by Judd Winnick. This is a reprint of his comic book series, or his comic strip series, that was in, it was in the local paper here in Minneapolis, which was really cool. And it basically, a kid just decides to bring home a clown and sees if they can keep him. And from there, he went, I don't know how many years he went, a couple of years, and he just went forward and just had a good time doing it, but eventually he got to the point where he realized he didn't want to do a comic strip. Now, if you remember, Judd was on The Real World. He met his friend Pedro Zamora. And after a while, the strip wasn't quite what he wanted to do, and so he ended it. And so the fun thing about this collection is that you get everything, and there's a beginning and the end. If you're looking for, at least I think, it's a funny strip. It deals with a couple serious issues, but like most strips, it's just a lot of fun to draw. And Frumpy's just one of those guys who, you know, forget ponies, puppy dogs, hamsters. He's not a creepy clown. He's a chain-smoking, cynical, anarchist clown who's more interested in sticking it to the stuffed shirt establishment and getting a job or focusing on the finer points of personal hygiene. So if you get a chance, I would definitely recommend picking these both up, especially if you are a fan of Judd, because this is probably his first work. And he's got his own, you know, the introduction pages there will tell him how he got published in the strips, and how he decided to eventually bow out.
I remember that. I remember buying those. Those are old.
Yeah. They might be out of print. Let me look at the 2001.
10 years ago.
Yep. I told you, I reached into the archives. These were good ones. These are a couple of those books. And as a matter of fact, everything I'm going to mention in this segment is just, these are things that I keep and I just pull out every so often and reread. And I can guarantee you 52 probably is not one of them.
Although the original 52 series, I reread that recently, like about a year or so ago. It holds up really well.
But isn't that the one where the Green Lantern and company commit genocide on a universal scale by purposely bringing a virus into that universe, and after it kills everybody off and creates the Commandy?
Nope, that's a Countdown.
Oh, okay. So never mind. I don't want to read Countdown again.
No. I remember reading Countdown at the time and getting a headache. And every so often I just want to say, okay, I remember reading it, but I don't remember much about it. And I'll go and I'll try and read a synopsis of it, and the headache returns.
Yeah, because it wasn't so much a standalone book like 52 was. It was more like they were trying to get you to read all the other books. And it's like the events didn't flow naturally in between the books. They were just kind of like the middle of Crisis and Infinite Earths. It was just, oh, well, you want to see what happened to Blue Devil? Read this book. You want to read what happened to this? Go read a Mega Man. It's like, no, in a standalone series, I don't want a bunch of crossovers that I have to read. You know, you're forcing me to do something. And Countdown kind of read that way. Not to mention when it got to the end, it was totally botched. Although I thought it flowed okay in the final crisis.
Speaking of big crossover things, I'm reading the X-Men Schism and then Regenesis.
Oh, you're a braver man than I.
I'm really liking some of the books that are coming out of it. Wolverine and the X-Men was great. I highly recommend, if you haven't read the X-Men in a long time, go out, pick up Wolverine and the X-Men number one. It's hilarious. Wolverine and Kitty Pryde are setting up the school at the old mansion. And they've got the people who are coming in to do the licensing for the school. And pretty much everything that can go wrong does. It's a very old sitcom premise, but it was a good way to introduce the characters, introduce the setting, introduce this. The other X-Men books that are coming out of it, I'm liking, but there's a problem I have with it. And I think what's going to happen is, because of what they've done, eventually someone's going to have to come in and do the Grant Morrison thing where it's okay, we're hitting the reset button. The X-Men are the characters who are hated and feared by the world that they protect. That used to be on the top of every issue. Well, now you've got Wolverine is setting up this school to train mutants and on like that. And the other side of it is Cyclops is, we are a separate country and we're a country at war. So we need to be treating this as if we are at war, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They're getting so far from the original premise, which is you as a reader identify with the characters because there's some part of your life where you're misunderstood. Therefore, that's what drove the book. That's what made the book big. Anybody who felt like they were an outsider would identify with the X-Men. Just kind of like Spider-Man, if you've ever been, oh, geez, things are a mess. I'm not able to handle everything. You know, normal teenage angst, Spider-Man's your character. They've gotten so far away from it that the X-Men really aren't the outsiders anymore. It's a good book, but it's not the X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make any sense at all?
Yeah. I mean, to me, it was always the X-Men seemed to be a thinly veiled knock on racism.
Yeah.
You know? And the problem is you can keep it going, but how long can you really do that? I mean, we've seen, you know, the X-Men have publicly saved the universe lots of times. And it's getting to the point where it's like, oh, they still hate us. Woe is us. I'm like, it's old. You know, well, if you almost, like you said, you need a fresh take, but you can't keep coming up with this over and over. I mean, Astro City, I think, funny enough, I read a theme like that. I read, I can't think of the name. It's the one with the confessor in Astro City. And what happens is a similar thing where something behind the scene turns the public against the heroes on a worldwide scale. And they talk about it and they mention things like, well, you know, don't they remember what happened in the 70s, which is something that he's just getting to. But the confessor mentions the thing that, you know, that dark side is always there. It just needs a reason to bubble forth. And the events of this, that particular Astro City run, the events do bubble forth and it does cost the heroes. And eventually they realize, oh, it's not that we hated the heroes. We were being manipulated because this alien race was trying to attack. And of course in Astro City, to Kurt Busiek's, you know, genius, threads of that have been already laid out for you. We've seen it in his first run. You see things like, you know, why can't they get pictures of the confessor? They've never had pictures of him. And all these things, just these little things that just kind of, oh, this happened and this happened. And all of a sudden they tie together in a just an incredible way. Marvel tried doing that with the Skrull attack, you know, just little things leading to a bigger one. So I think it's one of those things that's there. But a lot of times the X-Men, they just hit you over the head with it. We're hated. Well, not this week. You just saved us from Galactus. Maybe next week, you know. I think Ultimatums did a run, and if it's in my to-read pile. Oh, yeah, Ultimatum. The Ultiverse line?
Yeah.
Or not Ultraverse. But that's the one where Magneto makes a push. He floods New York. And essentially, everybody who's alive ends up going to war against them. And, you know, basically something like that happened, Magneto's is going to be sanctioned. He's going to be eliminated one way or another. You know, it's kind of like when Don Thompson from the Comic Buyer's Guide said why he doesn't enjoy Joker stories. For one man to commit that many murders in any amount of time, somebody somewhere is going to put a bullet in him. Especially the next time he escapes. You're going to hear Joker's loose. And, you know, they did a story like that in one of the Batman series where the Joker came out and some hitman just blew him away. And then, of course, the Joker stayed under wraps for a while. But, you know, the problem is you make him too outrageous and too murderous. It's like Jim Shooter said, they got to be punished somehow. And being captured and beaten up and thrown in jail isn't enough, you know. And of course, the problem is if you keep murdering off your arch villains, eventually you don't have any decent arch villains to attack.
Right.
So, you know, and again, I don't know if it's a spoiler warning, but in Ultimatum, you know, Magneto basically does get sanctioned and he is killed, and rightly he should be. He drowned New York. And, you know, it's hard for me a lot of times, especially in X-Men, because it seems like so many villains in X-Men are so damn powerful. What are we going to do when we catch them? Oh, we're going to put Apocalypse in jail. No, it doesn't work. So it takes a skilled writer to pull it off, too. I mean, and again, you mentioned the Grant Morrison thing when he did his run, you know, and essentially Magneto took over New York. Well, the next time Magneto shows his head, somebody's going to blow it off. And probably not with metal bullets. You know, they do make some pretty nasty plastic ones.
Well, the thing is, with that Grant Morrison story, the first thing Marvel did after Morrison left is, well, that really wasn't Magneto.
Well, yeah, I didn't read it. So it never happened.
Okay. Now, here's the thing. You've got an ultimatum. New York gets flooded. One of my favorite Golden Age stories, the second Submariner Human Torch fight. Submariner floods New York.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you've got this, for back then, a full page was crazy. They didn't do that. They didn't do splash pages or anything. They have a full page of the wave coming in, destroying buildings and everything. 2 months later, Submariner, I'm fighting the Nazis with you guys. We're all pals.
Well, even in World War II, I mean, we fought with the Soviets. And, I mean, it was a thing like, wait a minute, weren't you guys on Hitler's side for a while? And then all of a sudden, he turns around and smacks you. And like, oh, okay, I guess you're our friends now. You know, and Churchill was like, wait a minute. But, you know, Roosevelt was like, wait, I don't care. We got to win this war. The enemy of thy enemy is my friend. For today.
Well, the good thing is, back in the Golden Age, they were able to rebuild New York, you know, by the end of the issue.
True. Now, I'll tell you, I read something the other day, and I'm almost to the point where I might just stop buying Marvels and be buying that. I think they call them Marvel Adventure Line.
Yes.
I love it.
They are very fun. They're fun books.
This was one of those things. Every so often, I'll walk around and I'll shake my head in a good way that all of a sudden comics are actually coming into mainstream more so than they were me growing up. I went to a book fair at my daughter's school, and one of the things they have is, you know, they want you to go buy the books because some of the proceeds go to the school. And then the teachers have a list of books they want for their classroom. Well, one of the teachers my daughter has is really into comics. She has a bunch of action figures in the back of her room, and she's like, okay, kids, you can look at them, but don't touch. So I got my daughter Holly on a mission to pick one of the action figures I got in my basement and put it in with hers. So suddenly her action figures will start growing, like maybe one or two a week. One of the books she picked was Marvel Superheroes. And I don't have it here because we've already given it to her, but it was a 3-issue series just dealing with the forming of the Avengers. And it was interesting because the groups were there and they know each other. And, you know, there's not tons of continuity burying it. But what was interesting was that they decided they were going against Magneto. At the same time, the group of Avengers going after Magneto was at the United Nations. You had Captain America and Iron Man talking to the world leaders about what they are doing. You know, and some of them are trying, like, well, you know, you're going to need funding. And Stark's like, no, we don't. We've run your numbers. You're going to need funding. Well, what you don't realize is, you know, Thor is here as an ambassador from Asgard, which is amazing because that's not in the main Marvel line. And he has tons of wealth behind him, and he's pretty much financing everything. So they're admitting right then, Tony Stark doesn't have enough money to fund the Avengers, but Thor will. There's scenes where, for some reason, Mr. Fantastic is talking to the Black Widow, and Invisible Woman doesn't quite know what to think of that. Captain America obviously has a crush on the Invisible Woman, but she doesn't know about it. I mean, just these little type of continuity driven, or they're not continuity, they're just character driven things. And they're not tied down with 20, 30, 40 years of continuity, you know. They're not going to bring up things like we're bringing. Well, you know, Magneto's basically, you know, kicked butt 20 times before and wiped out cities and blah, blah, blah. You know, it was a refreshing take on heroes. It wasn't a new universe. It was just like, it was just there. It's almost like watching the Disney Avenger TV show, you know. The characters are there. Or watching the run of Justice League that Cartoon Network had. It was just the characters I know, the characters I love, they're not radically changed. They're not suddenly sluts or, you know, wearing their underwear on the inside of their pants. It was just amazing. And I read that at the end of it, there was a pet Avengers series. And it was a fun little book. It wasn't in a digest site, a little bit slightly bigger. And the fun thing was, anyways, about the book fair is that there were, that was one of about a dozen graphic novels there. And, you know, they had Bone, they had some of the ones you see, but I'm seeing more superhero ones. And, you know, this was a fun all-age romp that you could give to any kid and you wouldn't have to worry about, you know, massive objections about, you know, suddenly strange storylines or we're trying to make it relevant and dark and gritty or whatever. So it was just fun to see, you know. It's like when I walk into Toys R Us and I see they have a big rack of comic books or, you know, into a Target or a Walmart, you know, that gives me hope that four color books will survive. Certainly not the digital download thing, but.
Well, one thing, I took the residents of the group home to the library and one of the residents, he really enjoys looking at animals. He's nonverbal. But he enjoys looking at books of animals, and I'm going through and I'm looking, oh, there's got to be some sort of coffee table book.
Mm-hmm.
Something I can get for him. And I found a book on hummingbirds. I took his wheelchair and I put it at the desk and got him the book on hummingbirds. And he was so happy, started laughing and everything, and he's flipping through the book and flipping through the book. And we're going to be there for a while, so I have not been to a library for a long time because, for me, it's I order a book. And then I sell it at Half Price Book and Magazine.
Yeah, that's kind of what I do.
And so I started, I said, you know, everybody says that libraries are now stocking comics. So I went to an area for graphic novels, and it was really only about a shelf and a half. And it was the usual suspects. It was Watchmen, it was Mouse, it was Dark Knight. But then I went to the teen section. And it was full. They had more comics than actual books because they had runs of manga series.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they were putting all the superhero stuff. Yes, Joe, I picked up Old Man Logan in the teen section, even though it's got Wolverine disemboweling every member of the X-Men. It's got tons of gore. I'm not going to spoil the ending, but the ending is something out of a horror movie. That's in the teen section.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think they're reading them before they stock them up on the shelf. Now, we're going to talk a little bit about comic sales, not the DC stuff. Let's talk about Marvel. Marvel can't be too happy with the fact that DC, in the month of October, DC had a 51% market share.
Ugh. And
one out of every two books was a DC book.
The press was heavily DC.
And what, I think Marvel only had one book in the top 10, and that was the new Hulk number one by Mark Silvestri. And this is going to make people mad at me, but it's like every other Mark Silvestri book. All the men have the same face. All the women have the same face. I have trouble reading a Mark Silvestri book because I can't keep track of who's who. What was it?
Well, the Hulk wasn't too bad.
No, Hulk was okay because he didn't have a lot of normal characters. I may have told this story before. When the Wolverine comic started coming out, I was working at Schindler's. And Mark Silvestri took over as artist after a while. Do you remember the issue where Mariko was killed?
Mm-hmm.
And they had Wolverine holding her on the cover? And pretty much everybody who bought the book said, they killed Jubilee? Marvel's got a bunch of miniseries that were selling toward the lower end because a lot of their miniseries are just thrown out there. Well, they're canceling them. They canceled Mystery Men or All Winners? One of the two set, you know, using Golden Age characters. They canceled it with issue 5. It's an 8-issue miniseries. Canceled it with issue 5 ending on a cliffhanger. There are two other miniseries that were going to come out that they just canceled.
But that could work to their advantage. Remember what they did with Ghost Rider? Years later, they'll publish the ending and we'll go nuts looking for it. I'm reaching. I got nothing.
Yeah.
Neither does Marvel.
And let's see, the Von Doom miniseries was canceled before it came out. There was another miniseries. They're canceling a lot of their lower-end books. They got rid of a bunch of people who work at Marvel. They got rid of some editors.
Do you know offhand the books they're canceling, were they like $3.99 or $2.99 books?
$2.99 books.
Okay.
There's stuff on the lower end.
Yeah.
Because if you look... For all the people who say, I won't buy a $3.99 book, their highest selling books are the $3.99 books.
Well, the question also, and I harped on this in past podcasts, do these series, are they coming out of events organically, or are they just, here's a miniseries, you know?
Most of miniseries are, here's a miniseries.
Yeah. See, that to me is killing me because, you know, especially, you know, with Thor movies coming, we got 1,000 Thor miniseries. How do they relate? Not to mention, why do I care? This is like, what, the fifth time they've killed off Thor? Although it was kind of interesting that the end of Fear Itself. I say that because I'm wading through the Walter Simonson Mighty Thor.
Okay, yeah.
And I mean, what he did with Asgard, I mean, it made me so interested in Asgard as a world. Because, I mean, they made it just, it's not just a place where a bunch of faceless gods sit around and wait for Thor to show up and go, let's battle. I mean, he brought back characters from previous ones and he made it an interesting world. I just don't get that from the current Thor series because it's kind of like, oh, there's Loki. Oh, he's a kid. There's the three. I mean, other than the three warriors, three or trio or whatever the hell they call themselves, you know, it's just, I sit and I'm wondering, all these characters that have been introduced, where do they end up when Asgard got crunched to earth? Where are they in this big ass battle with Odin's brother? You know, I mean, they almost like have a separate universe the way they had Thor set up, but now it's just like it's another faceless Asgardian, whatever. Although, like I said, the ending of it, I had the same reaction Loki did, like, wait a minute. But I think that's a big thing, you know. DC does it lesser extent. Marvel just, they spit these things out, you know. Unless you have, like there was the Killraven that Joe Linsner did. Okay, yeah. You got me on Joe Linsner. Or, you know, again, even the Walt Simonson, there's a Baldur the Brave miniseries, which I don't know if it's reprinted in this set or if it's in a different.
Yes, it is.
So I'll read that. You know, that made sense. That had something going on while everything else was going on in Thor. But, you know, if you're just going to pull something out of your butt, you know, like the Von Doom thing, is he even a threat now? I mean, I thought he was running around crying because he doesn't have his country anymore for the umpteenth time.
I think that's one of the problems with a lot of this is they get pitches from people and they go, oh, this is a good story. And it comes out as a miniseries, but the people in marketing, they know it's not going to sell well. Now, let's say, Joe, you work in marketing. And your bonus and everything is based on how well you sell books. We got a Von Doom miniseries. And we got an Avengers event. Now, if you're going to want to protect your job, you're going to put out ads for the Avengers event. Well, it's going to sell anyway. Yeah, but then I could say, look, our marketing campaign worked. The Avengers is selling well.
Well, the other question would be, you know, is something happening with Doom? I mean, is he going to be in a major crossover coming up in like next year? I mean, occasionally they'll do things like that, like when GOG came out and GOG is going to be a major character in the upcoming mega crossover, so be sure to pick this issue up. Or, you know, sometimes it's subtle, like when the Thanos initiative came out. I mean, it came out of the Silver Surfer, and while Silver Surfer was depowered on a planet, Thanos ran around and got the Infinity Gauntlet gems for the first time. And then when he showed up back in Silver Surfer, he was suddenly the most powerful being in the universe. And then 3-4 issues later, the Infinity Gauntlet miniseries came out with all of its crossovers. You know, it was planned. It was flowing. You see a little bit of that in Marvel, you know, because when you sit back and they start saying, well, you know, this whole thing was planned. The disassemble, Civil War, World War Hulk, Skrull, you know, we were able to put in the Captain America dying thing. We were able to put in the mask being removed and the whole, you know, brightest day, darkest night, let's get rid of Mary Jane, out of sight thing. You know, and you look back and you say, okay, that makes sense, but it's almost like they're just floating from one event to the next event to the next event, you know. Now we're going to Fear Itself, you know, or whatever is after that. And I don't know. It doesn't sound like it's working. Now you were talking before we started talking about the comics. They let loose some other people, some editors.
Yep. Some of the editors who were working on a lot of miniseries and stuff were let go. A lot of the production, well, I'm not going to say a lot, but some of the production people were let go. And as I read where it was, well, you know, they're doing budget cuts. They're not going to have as much inventory, which means that for your Marvel trades and your Marvel hardcovers, you might not be able to get reorders on those.
Well, you know, that's bullshit right now, because that same guy we were talking about, Brian Hitch, Tilting at Will Mills, he says right now there are not a lot of Marvel inventory out there.
Yeah, and that's part of it. They're cutting their inventory even more.
He thinks it's because Disney's now pushing their management team into Marvel. And Disney is an entertainment company, and I don't know if they understand the way, it's almost a minor miracle the way DC set up their graphic novels, even back when I had the shop, because you could order and get almost any comic and graphic novel you need, and it became a significant source of revenue for them. Marvel has never developed that. They've never allowed themselves to do it, because first you had Ron Perlman running them, who all he wanted was the next stock bonus to boost them another $1 billion or so. It had nothing to do with, you know, keeping stock on hand, because by God, it cost. And Marvel started to get it back after they got their self away from him and they got out of their bankruptcy and they were able to get back on track. But now they're going back, and Disney seems to be jumping in. And I, honest to God, don't think they get it. They don't understand, by having these books ready to go, we're making money. They're like, make them, let them go out of print, let's get to the next one. You know, they don't have an idea of perpetual inventory for graphic novels that stores, comic stores anyways, will keep buying. It may be we're going to see more like what's going on with DC. They're going to say, well, guess what? Our top selling books, we're going to let go exclusive Amazon. You know, we don't care what Walden Book does. I mean, how many other bookstores are left?
Not that many.
That's my theory of the whole thing. You know, it's just...
Well, one thing I will say that people who work at Marvel are saying is that this isn't Disney. It's the head of Marvel, Perlmutter, I think his name is.
Oh, the dime squeezer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what it is, it's sales have shrunk over the past 3 years. For all the talk of how great Justice League did, I'm going to let everybody in on a fact. Even with the huge promotion, even with the huge sales, Justice League number one has not outsold the Justice League number one of 2006.
And that, you know, I'll just
sink in.
While you're sinking that, the guy in charge of Marvel now, he's one of these penny pinchers. If he had a choice between making $100,000 by publishing something or $100,000 by letting production people go or cutting inventory or cutting staff, he's not one of these guys who gets the idea, you know, the more we sell, the more we make. He's the other side of the coin. The more we cut, the more we make. So he's going to basically bleed Marvel to their bare bones. And it will probably be also at the expense of a comic store, because like you said in the beginning, if you want it, get it, because you're not going to be able to go back and get it.
Yeah.
That's just the way this guy operates. He's basically just a corporate head guy. He's done this all his life, and that's the only thing he understands. I disagree vehemently with that theory. But then again, I'm also been on the retail end where I have people coming, knocking me, you know, do you have this book? Sorry, can't get it. And on the other hand, you'll probably start seeing things on eBay go crackers. Remember when every so often a graphic novel would go out of print and there was a huge demand for it and it would go up in price like crazy? I think the Godzilla, or was it the Conan Essentials that went out of print?
Conan. And you could still get Godzilla.
Yeah, and they're just insane. I mean, you try to find them.
Well, This isn't the first time Marvel's done something like this.
No. Say it isn't so.
Back, I think, was it 1996?
Mm-hmm.
Marvel did a thing called Marvolution. And I think it was when they got rid of Tom DeFalco as editor-in-chief. They were going to have five different editors-in-chief. They were publishing so many books that they had five people who were kind of in charge of stuff. It was called Marvolution. And it also came at the time when they were shipping their own stuff. And we all know how well that did. Sales continued to plummet. Heroes World, they had to shut it down. They went over to Diamond. And I actually did some research on this. Marvel fired 275 people in one day. Now, it doesn't break down how many of those were people in Heroes World and how many of those were people who worked in production and how many people worked in office jobs. They actually talked about it in the Comics Journal, called it Marvelcution, you know, instead of, you know, evolution, it's execution. 275 people laid off on a single day. Now, that's a lot of people in the comic business. A lot of them never came back to comics. Some of the editors that were let go, Bob Harris was then elevated to editor-in-chief, and he was able to pick who he worked with. And oddly enough, most of those people are showing up over at DC now, that he's editor-in-chief over there. But I wanted to ask you about how that sort of thing affected your shop. And that would be a Tale from the Shop. Tales from the Shop is sponsored by Chris B., musician here in the Twin Cities. You can go to her website at broomhildamusic.com. You can buy her new CD. You can pre-order her next CD. Let me take a look at her calendar, because I haven't looked at it in a while. Oh, her Best Day Ever tour dates are coming soon, so sign up for her mailing list, and you'll be mailed, because she's doing some open mics, and she's doing some small gigs here in the Twin Cities. Amazing artist. And also the person who gave us the theme for Tales from the Shop. So, Joe, do you remember about when this happened, when Heroes World shut down shop and everybody went over to Diamond?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know a lot of, of course, it was 15 years ago, but I don't remember a whole lot about how they went about ending Heroes World. So, could you walk us through what happened?
One day you opened up Diamond Datelines and said, we'll be taking over Heroes World's account. Anything due payable will be collected by us. Now, the most annoying thing about Heroes World is that Cap City, I'll have to publish some of these if I find them, but Cap City, Diamond, they would send you one invoice with everything on it. With Diamond, if you reorder it, it'll show up, you'll get your reorders early, but it'll be billed on your next invoice. Cap City would send you two invoices. Heroes World would send you invoices just at the drop of a hat. Oh, here's your reorder on Thor. You get an invoice for that. Here's your main invoice. Oh, remember those graphic novels you ordered? That's on this invoice. So I might have on one check five or six different invoices. Whereas with Diamond, I have one. With Cap City, I might have two. When Cap City went away, got absorbed by Diamond, Diamond had practice already at collecting Cap City's accounts. With Heroes World, it got so bad, I couldn't even find someone to take my money. So I just basically waited. And sooner or later, Diamond came around and they said, hey, we have these invoices due. And I said, that's fine. I got this money ready to give you. Heroes World didn't want it. And now we know why, because they probably fired the people that were collecting the money. And what was annoying was you'd suddenly, you know, you'd get your diamond invoice and there was another $100 charge. What's that for? Well, you owe this hero's invoice. No, I paid it. And sometimes it would be so cheap, like it'd be a $20 invoice. It's like, why am I going to fight over this? Or a $2.30 invoice. I'm going to, you know, dig through mounds of records just to find out where it is. You know, it was like they just went through their files one at a time and said, oh, this one wasn't paid. Send this one off. Send this one off. And Diamond just collected everything. And eventually it just trickled away. I mean, operationally, it really had no effect. It was just an aggravation thing where you think, okay, I owe $5,000 this week, and now suddenly there's an extra $200 charge on there because of Heroes World. Now I have to go find the check that, yes, indeed, I did pay it. Or in some cases, no, I didn't pay it. Or in some cases, no, they never shipped it to me. So it was just kind of a headache. But it was just part of it for the course. The biggest problem, like I harped on before and what's going on now, is that Heroes and Marvel just let things go out of print. You know, the biggest demand, and again, just because it's sitting in front of me, I'm going to pick it. Let's say Walt Simonson's Mighty Thor Volume 2. It would go out of print, but 1, 3, 4, and 5 would still be in print. It's like, why? How am I going to sell it if I can't get the other one, considering it's like Sandman? It's one big, long story. You know, you need issue 2 in order to read into issue 3. You know, it was just crazy. And it was just ugly, you know, because you could never tell what would go out of print. And again, this was before eBay, before Amazon. So it wasn't like you were just going to turn around, oh, you don't have it? Fine, I'll go to eBay or Amazon. I mean, they popped up towards the end of the 90s, and that's where you have one advantage nowadays, is where something goes out of print, you can just go online and probably find it, if not on eBay, if not on Amazon. You know, there's 100 smaller sites. You could probably just put something on our Facebook page and somebody might cough it up and give it to you. It'll be interesting even now, because now things are all going digital. So if something goes out of print, they might just say, okay, it's out of print. You can go to our digital library and download it. And now that there's things like Nooks that are in color and you can actually enjoy a comic book without graininess or, you know, having to take it in black and white, I could see people downloading their entire collection and holding it onto a Nook, as opposed to the way Corey and I do, where we have entire rooms filled with our collection.
Yeah, that's kind of frightening.
As much one of the fun things as I remember about it, I mean, I could see, I've done it already. I've got all the Star Trek comic books I bought for $10 at a Half Price bookstore, and I have everything from Golden Key all the way through the end where Wildstorm had it. You know, every single issue now is on these discs. I can look at them at will when I want to. I mean, that's the way it's going, and that's the way it's going to be. And I, you know, we'll find out if, you know, 10 years from now, we're still podcasting, talking about Crazy Comics, or maybe we'll change the name, Crazy Comic Digital Downloads and stuff.
The thing I remember after the Marvel Cution, there was an article in the Comics Journal that said that one of the things they got rid of was a warehouse to store trade paperbacks, hardcovers, et cetera, et cetera. And this was when trades really started to take off. All of the Masterworks went out of print. Now, one of the things about DC's archive program, even though they seem to be walking away from it, you can get any of the DC archives. They've got them. When they do their prints, they're not printing for the next year, 2 years. They're printing for 10 years. They want to keep that stuff in print because they know there's demand for it. They've reprinted all of the All-Star Comics, the Golden Age series of the Justice Society. Whole thing, been reprinted. You go to your comic shop today. You go to Amazon today. You can log in. You can ask the guy running the shop, you know what, I would like Volume 5 of All-Star Comics Archives. They can get it for you within 2 weeks. DC's got them all. Marvel would put out a paperback, and a month later, you go, you know, I finally have enough money to get that paperback. It's not up on the shelf. Joe, can you get that for me? Nope.
Yeah.
Marvel printed their paperbacks and hardcovers the same way they printed their comics. They printed to order and then a little more for spoilerage. You know, this didn't print right.
Or got damaged in shipment or something.
And they kept that up until the X-Men movie came out, at which point the people in charge of Marvel were like, so how much money did we make off X-Men trade paperbacks? Well, none really. Well, why not? Because you told us that we can't have any in stock. And the editor-in-chief at the time was very much a soap opera-style editor. So there weren't clear breaks in storylines. The X-Men went on and on and on and on and on. There would be times when a creator would leave on a cliffhanger and the next creator would pick it up with that cliffhanger and on and on and on. So they reshuffled the editorial team. Do I think that'll happen again this time? No, I think the book trade is far bigger. I think the big problem is if they're not going to have back stock, they're going to lose out on sales. Because one of the things I remember from the 90s that the people who worked at DC said is, you know what? If we didn't have our warehouse, we would not be making a profit. They made more money off their paperbacks and the backstock paperbacks than they did off comics until comic sales came back up again. Those trade paperbacks and how they moved into libraries and moved into bookstores is kind of what saved DC at the time. And I would not be surprised if, because DC was able to handle it and all that, that it really kind of helped the comic industry being farsighted. So I don't know what's going to happen, but with your Marvel trades, I would order them as soon as you can. They've done a good job of keeping the Masterworks and the Essentials in print. But once those babies start to go, it's going to be a long time before they reprint them. Marvel had to go through, I think it was from like 2001 to 2006, they had to create a program to reprint all of those Masterworks in hardcover again. And everybody involved was shocked at how well they sold. What do you mean Fantastic Four number one, the first Fantastic Four Masterwork had orders of 2,500? You've got people who, now they've got money, they want those hardcovers.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting near the end of the show because we're over an hour. We have a new sponsor, Joe.
We do.
Our new sponsor, and it's a recorded ad, is BartCop.com.
Cool.
BartCop.com is a political website, a political humor website. He started back in the early 90s with an email list, and the name of the email list was Rush Limbaugh is a Lying Nazi Whore.
It's kind of subtle.
Yeah, that's the thing about Bart. You don't know where he stands on things. In 96, he started putting up a website called BartCop.com. I will let people know it's very lefty. It's very political. But if you're into that, it's really funny. And Bart himself's a great guy. He sells subscriptions. And if you buy a subscription, you can listen to his online radio show. He's got about 170 episodes. I'm on some of them. I was a co-host for a while. Lately, he's not had time to do the podcast or radio show or whatever he wants to call it. But here's the ad for BartCop.com.
Hi, my name's Bart, and I got a little radio show over at BartCop.com. We call it the Tequila Treehouse. And on the radio show, we talk about a lot of things. You know, we talk about sports, and we talk about sex, and we talk about TV, and we talk about movies. But really, we're not talking about those things. We're usually talking about the politics of the sports and the sex and the TV and the movies and that. So if you go to BartCop.com, you might get to hear a sample. Actually, the radio show is for the subscribers, but now and then we open it up to the general masses, or we play some snippets on there trying to tease you into subscribing. But that's over at BartCop.com, the Tequila Treehouse. Try it. You might like it.
All right. So, Joe?
Yes?
We haven't had a show for about a month or so.
Very true.
Our schedules haven't matched up.
Well, that was your fault.
Well, yeah.
I'm not blaming you. I'm just saying it's your fault.
Here's the thing. We wouldn't have had a show today if I would have woke up before 9 o'clock.
True.
I got a call at 7 a.m. from the group home saying, we need somebody to work 7:30 to 3. And it was like 5 minutes to 7:30. I woke up at 9, gave him a call, said, no, we filled the shift, or I would have taken that shift too. You know, that's what you do.
And meanwhile, it would have been all overtime. Corey texted me, and I was just sitting around packing up my eBay stuff, trying to get it out before I get deployed again.
Speaking of deployment, have you heard anything at all other than you don't want to be deployed over Christmas?
I might have a short week deployment coming up, but I haven't heard anything about it. It's one of these things where they said, if it happens, we'll let you know. Just be ready to move on December 5th. So
no.
It's possible that week I may be calling from someplace else.
Ooh.
Or I'll come back and say, yeah, never guess where I've been.
A mystery place.
I know.
Is that like the old game, Mystery Date?
As we're recording, it's Black Friday, and I'm going out not to join the massive throngs and commit mayhem and violence, but I'm just going to go to my comic store.
I'm going to actually, this is a bonus tale from the shop, because I was thinking about this earlier today. Back in the 80s, you know, Black Friday wasn't a big deal, blah, 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 blah. And when you bought the shop, one of the things you did is the day after Thanksgiving, you held a sale.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like for a week. And I think you had a special where if you were a subscriber, you got a day early. And then the day after Thanksgiving, it was usually 50% off back issues and other stuff in the store. And you were one of the first shops I'd ever heard of to do sales. Now, were you the first shop or did Hot Comics do that before you bought them?
I don't recall Hot Comics doing that, although we would try to coordinate and do it all at the same time so we could make like one flyer, make a big deal about it.
Yeah.
But it didn't always happen that way. But it was just one of those things where I thought, let's just have a good time. We'll clear out some back issues and just do a sale, you know, and it would make it so people would make this a destination after Thanksgiving. You know, we put out ads, we put out, you know, back then you could, you know, we didn't have the internet. You didn't have social networking. I mean, it'd be a lot easier nowadays to get an event going. But yeah, it was just something that we did. I mean, I always recall when Pat and I first broke into comics doing the Weekend Warrior thing that we were one of the first guys. We came in and we had books like 20% off. And all the old school dealers were like, oh my God, I can't believe these guys are doing it. They're going to ruin the marketplace. Everybody's going to do it. And, you know, the guy running the con, John Nunziata, he just kind of shook his head. Whatever, you know, because John was one of these guys. When he first started, he ran around town, bought every single Golden Age comic he could, regardless of the price. And people thought he was an idiot. And then in the 80s, when those Golden Age comics started going up in price faster than most people changed their underwear, he didn't look so much like an idiot. You know, there's been controversy with him ever since, but, you know, he just would listen to these guys and he said, you're the same guys who are calling me an idiot for buying Golden Age. Why am I going to listen to you now? So
that was the other thing. When you did do your sales, I remember there would be other shop owners come in the shop. Or, you know, I'd hear from other shop owners and they go, oh, he's killing the back issue market. He's destroying it. Doing sales. He's putting discounts on new books. He's going to kill the market. He's going to kill the comic market. You can't do a sale. Shinders, I remember when I worked there, nothing was on sale. You bought the discount card. There were a couple other comic shops where they never had sales. I'd never heard of a comic shop having a sale till you did. Now, there were times when you went a little overboard and you had too many sales in a row, but it was usually because something happened. I remember you had a sale, and then a month or so later, your computer died. So you had to have another sale, and I think you called it the dead computer sale, where it was, I'm having a sale till I make this much money. Once I make this much money, the sale is done.
Yeah, very specific.
But I think it was a shift. You understood the shift that back issues were dying in a lot of ways. Because you talked about it as, this is inventory and you need to turn your inventory. It's not worth anything if it sits in a box all year.
Yeah.
Whereas other retailers, at the time, and I think a lot of those guys are gone now, they were more collectors. Well, if I have it in the box and it goes up in price, that means I made more money. No, it means it's still sitting there and you're still renting space and you're still paying tax on it and it's not making you any money because it sits. You got to churn. Brian Hibbs will talk about it in his column. He monitors trade paperbacks.
Oh, yeah. He's real meticulous at it.
And if it doesn't sell for a year, he's not going to replace it when it does sell. It's businesses are all about churn. It's
most businesses.
If the product comes in, you got to get that product out the door. You got to sell it. Yep. You are not a warehouse. You are not a showcase. You're not a museum.
Get it out of here. Yeah, there. You know, and that's the thing with the sales is it was a great way to turn old inventory. I mean, it didn't matter if the guide said it was worth $20. If I'm not selling it, it's not worth $20. If I can get 10 for it, I'm happy. You know, granted, if I paid 5 for it, I'd be even happier. But, you know, there were some books that just wouldn't turn. And it wasn't.
And there were some that turned fast.
Yeah.
And one of the things I did when I was in charge of back issues, well, it kind of, I felt like I was in charge of back issues. I would monitor when certain hot books would sell. You know, you had this book and it's starting to break. Okay, we'll put it up on the wall at $5. Sells in a day. All right. $7 sells in a day. $10 sells in a day. $15. That takes a week to sell. You would just see how the market could react. Cause if it's selling in a day, it's too low. Mm-hmm. But if it's sitting up there for 3 months, it's too expensive. I don't care if Wizard says it's worth $50. We've had it up there for a year. It didn't sell during the sale when it was 25. Mark it to 20. Get it out the door.
And it was a conundrum too with back issues because if you didn't have them, and this was in the 90s, but you'd walk in, if you didn't have back issues, people like, oh, this isn't a comic store. I mean, we had literally 24 long tables full of comics. I mean, it was 3,000 foot long store. It was like one half of the store in the wall of comics, and then you had the tables of back issues. But like you said, they wouldn't move. You know, who's going to come in and buy ROM? You know, it was kind of funny because I used to watch. You would put a set of ROM up and Butch would grab that set of ROM and throw it in the back issues. Or you'd put them in the quarter box, Butch would put them back in the up box. And, you know, I mean, there were certain things you could do other than having a sale. You could move things. And that was always great because you'd move things. People come in and see things changing and they, hey, when did you have this? And I had to bite my tongue off and slap myself with it because I actually have had that thing in inventory for 5 years. And now you're finding it. I tried to get other stores into this idea and this never worked. But you'd walk into a store and you say, you know, you've been sitting on this piece of toy, statue, whatever for 4 years. Why don't I bring it to my store? One of two things will happen. Someone's going to come in, see it's gone, and go, hey, I was going to buy that. And you say, well, I can get it for you. And then bring it back. Or I bring it to my store, sell it, and I turn around and give you the money.
Yeah.
But that was such a foreign concept, even to the other hot comics. You know, I mean, you would think you got three stores. I mean, we're all individually owned. There was a fourth, but it went under. And
I blame you.
I'll take that, but it's not my fault. But the idea would be like, okay, I'll come over, I'll get some books I need from you, you come over and get them from me. Well, I was like the only guy who did that. And so finally get to the point where these guys would, hey, you know, you owe us like about $200 or $300 worth of books. And I said, well, you're supposed to come over to my store and get it. That was the deal. No, we can't be doing that. I said, okay, well, then just half price. I'll pay you what you pay for them. You know, wholesale them to me, I'll wholesale them to you. And that actually worked with some of the more forward-thinking stores. You know, Bob at The Source, this is before Nick joined him, Greg at Dreamhaven. I mean, if I came in, he would wholesale me things for 50%. Uncle Sven, Colonel Dave from Uncle Sven's would come over. He'd buy things for me. You know, I was kind of like, why should I turn around and reorder it for Diamond or Cap when I can just get it from another retailer? Who's sitting on them? I said, I'm not going to come over and get the hot number one book that you're going to sell out of. I'm looking for, you know, what people give me in their want list and for things that I'm sold out of that I'd like to keep on the shelf longer than a week or two. Although ultimately, when we tracked the books, we found out very few books would sell after that 1 week.
Yep.
You didn't sell it for a week, you're stuck with it. And then you had 50% sales.
And it was always weird to me that people would look at it as, well, I need to have, you know, a complete run of Spider-Man. I need to have a complete run of this. I need to have a complete run of that. When I was at Shinders, I think I've told this too, you were expected to have 10% of your comic sales be back issues. Now, because I was kind of aggressive in how I dealt with back issues, and I was aggressive in, you know, making sure that I kept the hot stuff available, I was running about 15%. By the time I was helping you with back issues, I asked you, and you said, I'd be happy if sales were 5% of, if back issues were 5%. Think about that. Your store, the entire, I would say, at least a third of your floor space was for back issue boxes.
Yep, 10%.
5% of your sales.
I made more money on what hung on the wall than I did almost anything else. I think when we broke it down, it was like about 50% was new comics. Maybe it was a 20 or 30% were toys. 10% was weird stuff. And I mean, we had a lot of weird stuff. That could have been Pogs, Magic Cards, Hot Wheels, Kubricks, t-shirts, lighters, you know, little charm pendants, whatever. And then 10% was back issues. The only time that nudged is when we had a sale. It would sometimes go up to 15%. But the bottom line was, is I was a new comic book store. And it reminds me back when Gruber and I were trying to get into the business, and we talked to John Nunziata, who we'd been buying comics from for ages. And he kind of told us, he said, you can do one of two things. You can be a new comic store, or you can be an old comic store. And we decided we were going to be work on new comics, even on toys. We sold more new toys than I think any of the other two hot comics. You know, their jaws would drop. We get 10, 20 cases of Spawn toys, and we'd have about 80% of them sold or pre-sold before they even got there. I had Spawn toys coming from all sorts of sources, including McFarlane himself. And the other shops just shook their head. They couldn't understand that, even the two other hot comics. But if you were looking for classic toys, you know, Star Wars, Brian was the guy to talk to, or G.I. Joe, because he had those classic toys that nobody else had. And part of that was arrogance, too, because he would say, well, I got them. You ain't going to Target to get them. I'm not putting them on sale. On the other hand, he also sat on them for a very long time.
Yeah.
Although he did do a lot of ads. Back then, the big thing was The Toy Collector, a comic book put out by Krauss Publication. He'd run ads there and sell them. You know, nowadays, he'd probably be doing eBay if he isn't doing them already. You know, and the other store, Kristen's store, she was really good with Transformers and other package fig old ones. You know, I would get them, and I'd be better off just to trade them to them because I just kept moving the new stuff. And I did set up a pretty good perpetual inventory. And then, like you said, sales would blow out, and cons would be the other place you'd blow things out. And then as the 90s ended, and we started to get on eBay, but, you know, as I talked before, eBay was a different animal because I could spend as much time on eBay as I did working a physical store and still not get the same results. If you don't believe me, go look at my eBay site. Go buy some 99 cent variant covers.
There you go.
Woo-hoo.
Well, believe it or not, kids, you've wasted over an hour
listening
to us blather on about funny books.
You could have been looking at, you know, girly pictures online, but thank you for spending it with us.
You could have been eating more pie.
I think I'm going to do that after I'm done.
Joe, I may not have a full-time job, although the group home has given me full-time and more hours, and I may be out looking for work. I had two interviews about a week and a half ago that I haven't heard back on yet because, you know, the holidays, you pretty much know it's going to be 2 to 3 weeks before they get back to you. But I'm not worried. I have 5 pies in my fridge right now as we speak. That's all that matters.
Good for you.
pie and funny books. So, we're doing it again next week.
Yeah, I'll believe it when it happens. You'll find some reason.
Hey.
You're all wuss. I mean, I call you, I'm drunk from Alaska, and I call you and say, let's do a podcast. And you're like, I'm working for 24-hour shifts. I can't do it. See the dedication I give you people to this podcast?
So we'll see you next week.
Period. This is podcasting. We don't see nothing.
They can see the little bars moving on their computer or their MP3 player.
Yeah, that's true. And they can see the things I post at our Facebook site.
There you go. So we'd like to remind everybody that the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic you like the most.